This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Cheatash. My name is Chris, and today I am joined by a very special guest, author of the book Forget Me Not, Ariana Kabodian. And am I pronouncing your name right?
Ariana.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you for asking.
Ariana. Okay. And did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Kabodian.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's funny. I did have somebody I went to high school with, and he was Armenian. His last name was Changelian.
Okay. Definitely an Armenian name for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that pretty much like anything ending in like I-A-N?
Yep. So I-A-N or Y-A-N mm-hmm. are pretty much giveaways. My father's first name is Armin, so that's also a pretty good giveaway as well. But yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But thank you so much for having me today, Chris.
Absolutely. I enjoyed reading your book and hearing these stories that, you know, this part of history I'm not super familiar with. And it sounds like, you know, people call the Armenian genocide the forgotten genocide. So it seems like a lot of people don't really know about mm-hmm. what happened back early 1900s in this part of the world. I enjoyed this a lot. It definitely made me research it a lot more. Before we start with the book, I wanted to ask you, like, where were you, what were you doing before the book?
As in before I got the idea to write the book?
Mm-hmm. Like, were you in school, mm-hmm. working, etc.?
All the above.
All the above.
Yes. So I started my MBA experience early, I want to say May 2020. And so I was also working full-time and going to school part-time. And my sister gave me a book to read about the Holocaust. It's mm-hmm. called The Tattooist of Auschwitz. And it's about, it's a mostly true story, but it's mm-hmm. about a man and a woman who meet in a concentration camp and fall in love. And to me, I'm a fast reader. If the, you know, topic is something that really entices me. And I read the book in an afternoon, and it was something that stayed with me after, mostly because at the end of the book, it talked about what these two people did with their lives afterwards. And even though it's a mostly true story, to me, it was a way to honor those people, to honor what happened, and to preserve all of the above. And growing up, because like you said, the genocide wasn't something that was taught in school. It wasn't something that you would see in a movie or in a book, for example. Or if you did, it was very, very seldom. And mm-hmm. so for me, I always found myself growing up, you know, yearning to read a book about the Holocaust. Or if there was a movie about the Holocaust, it would always be an interest of mine because of the unfortunate similarities. And so because of that, my sister knew it was an interest of mine to read that book. Mm-hmm. And after reading the book, I realized that my family has stories similar to this. And it was a good way to preserve history and to preserve my ancestors' experiences. I didn't know exactly what it would turn into, But I just thought, let's just see where it goes. But I began that journey early in August of 2020, and the book was completed by early January of 2021.
Wow. Okay. It seems like so many things. There were so many things started during the pandemic. I remember reading in your news release in the Detroit Free Press, this was like your pandemic project. And it's funny because I started this during the pandemic too. And I,
oh, cool.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people started new journeys in that time period. You know, for some people, they were stuck at home,
mm-hmm.
you know, not a whole lot of places you could go. So all of a sudden, ideas start flowing. I thought of this idea. And speaking of the Holocaust, the first book I did for the channel was, if you've heard of Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Okay, I haven't. Let me write that down.
He wrote the book on his experiences in a concentration camp. And it's crazy. He's a doctor. He's a psychologist. He had a chance to leave Austria, but he chose to stay because his parents couldn't leave the country. I think there was some sort of passport issue, something like that. And his parents wanted him to leave, but he said, you know what? I'm going to stay. I think he quoted one of the Ten Commandments, honor thy father and thy mother. And that's kind of what hit him, like, oh.
Oh, wow.
I have to stay.
Yeah.
Eventually, he gets taken to one of the camps. He spends a pretty good amount of time there. But then I believe he tells a story of the Americans coming, liberating the camp. And he goes on to be a prominent psychologist and speaks a lot about how hardship, about sometimes you need struggle in your life to like
persevere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To like push through certain things or like to level up, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding book. Not too long either.
Thank you.
Quick read. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was important to me, speaking on the topic of perseverance, to have the reader, especially because, like you said, with the pandemic, obviously we're dealing with a time of such unprecedented, and we have never really experienced that before in our lifetime, at least. And mm-hmm. so for me, writing a book about a topic as the severity within that in itself, especially during a pandemic, I really wanted to show the reader that even in the worst of times, these people still made sure to not let that defining moment in their life define them,
mm-hmm.
that they still were able to find a way to give themselves the quality of life that they knew that they wanted and that they deserved. But I also wanted to owe that to each survivor to talk about their life after as well, because it was important for me to give them that honor and that respect as well, mm-hmm. to show not only myself, but to people that are reading the book, that you can overcome anything, but you can also, in a way, you know, like what you said with the psychologist, go to college or get your career that you want or have the family that you want. Those things to me are so important, and to not let what defined that moment in your life define the rest of your life, I think is so powerful, especially during a pandemic.
Mm, yeah. And I wanted to ask you about the people and the families that you outline in the book. How does one go about like finding these families and these people? Like, how did that start?
A great question. So all these people in the book are related to me, whether it's a direct relationship or it's a relationship through a marriage.
Oh, wow.
Everybody in this book is a family member or an ancestor of mine in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
The first story in the book is from my great-grandmother. And she, Melanie Dilan Artar, she I knew since, I think until I was about 10 years old and she passed, but mm-hmm. at the time of the genocide, she was very, very young. She was, I think, a few months old when this happened. And so for me, knowing her and knowing what she endured to a degree, always stuck with me. And my grandmother in this book too, she survived the Istanbul pogrom, and she immigrated to the United States in her early 20s, not knowing English. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't imagine what that would be like. That sounds terrifying. And mm-hmm. To do that by yourself, that's not something I know that I could do. So I give her a lot of credit. But for me, it was knowing a couple of these stories throughout my life and realizing that there are unfortunately a lot more. And so for me, I just did whatever I could to speak with as many family members as I could and try to preserve the stories, as mm-hmm. many that I could. There, I think there's maybe two or three stories that didn't make it into the book because it was too hard for my family members. And, you know, for me, it was, let's preserve it however we can. And so to me, you know, that was the most important thing. It wasn't like, let's see how many stories I can get in the book. It was, mm-hmm. no, let's honor who I'm interviewing. Let's honor who we're interviewing for, and let's preserve it however we can. So I have them written and completed for me and for them. And to me, that's still honoring them. It's mm-hmm. also important for me to hope that this book, in a way, motivates people to preserve their own history, their own family's history, because you don't have to be Armenian to have some sense of, you know, association to this. Mm-hmm. Everybody comes from somewhere, and we all of our ancestors endured some struggle to a degree. And it's important, in my opinion, to preserve it however we can with what we have. People don't need to necessarily write a book, but if they are to gather things that they have and put them in one spot, or if there's an ancestor that's a family member that's still alive, you know, maybe just put your you know, iPhone up or whatever and do a recording and do that process, I think is really important. So I really hope that motivates people to dig deep into their own past too.
It's the last interview I did was with Ellen Gellerman, who wrote a novel, and she told me the same thing. She said that I should record like my grandma and grandparents telling stories of when they came over here. So where my family's Serbian or Yugoslavian at the time, it was Yugoslavia, but you know, we're Serbian and Macedonian. And I was telling her this and she's like, yeah, why don't you like do an episode with them, Chris? Like, wow, that's actually a really good idea.
Yeah.
And now you're mentioning it, so like double. That makes me think.
It's a sign.
It's a sign. Yeah. I really should do that because I'm not super familiar with my family's history. I mean, you know, my parents, grandparents for the most part are still around, but I don't really ask the questions too much, which I should. That's kind of on me. And I should do it sooner rather than later before. Yeah. I mean, people are getting old now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's going to get tougher and tougher. Within your community, did you grow up with, like where you went to school and stuff, are there a lot of Armenians in this area or where you grew up?
Southeastern Detroit or Southeastern Michigan has a big Armenian population for sure, mm-hmm. a great Armenian community. I grew up going to Armenian church, but I also grew up going to Catholic school all my life. So it was a very interesting upbringing in the sense that I had the privilege to be around two similar but different religions. And I mean, in high school, I took a world religions class, and it was something that I thought was great because it really broadened my horizons. And to me, that's what, in my opinion, life is all about, is learning and growing. I mean, even though I'm 100% Armenian, I learned so much with this process of my book. Mm-hmm. The beginning of the book talks about the history of Armenia and what led up to the genocide, which I think is so important, mm-hmm. because nothing appears out of nowhere. There's always something that leads to something else, which leads to something else, which is the end result. I like metaphors and analogies, and I say that in terms of A to Z, nothing's just that drastic. There's always those letters in between that make the alphabet. And so for me, it was, okay, well, I know what A to Z is, but what are the letters in between? Let's try to figure that out. And so for me, it was really important to do that for myself because I really wanted to learn and to gain so much more knowledge than what I had known previously. But it was also important for me to think about the reader. If they were Armenian or if they weren't, or even if they knew Armenian history or if they didn't, that they were still able to get something from this book and that it would be as factually correct as possible was just so important.
Yeah, you sourced or like you referenced a lot of articles, like I noticed in your, like in the writing with the sub or superscripts or mm-hmm. subscripts references. Yeah, that was very cool to see. It seems like you took that very seriously that, hey, I just want to make sure that this is coming from a good source, that I'm kind of backing up what I'm saying here. Yeah, no, I thought that was very cool. Is there like one particular book on this time period that you'd recommend that stands out? Like, do you have something like that, like a book about the Armenian genocide that's like really good to get a good grasp of what was going on?
Great question. From a historical perspective, I mean, the topic is very heavy. It's something that is important to read and important to have books, you know, written about, mm-hmm. but it is still a very hard subject to read, whether you're Armenian or if you're not. Mm-hmm. There's a book I read recently. It's called The Resistance Network, and it's by Hachik Muradian. I'll send that to you after this. But
yeah.
He is a historian. He is a professor, and he works at the Library of Congress, too. And so he had written and published a book, I believe, in 2021 as well.
Oh, wow.
And it goes in depth about history, just not from from the Armenian history part of it, but from, you know, for example, Syria. And he really mm-hmm. brings everything in together. And as hard of a read as it was very well written from an historical perspective. It was, I mean, I learned so much. So to mm-hmm. me, that's a book that I would recommend. I think mm-hmm. it was maybe shy of 200 pages, so it's okay. a good read, but it's not super long. But from a detail perspective, from an analytical data perspective, it was very eye-opening.
And going back, your analogy of A to Z mm-hmm. and all the letters in between, here's an interesting question that sometimes I ask myself this, like, do you think history takes jumps, or does it take steps to get to where it's going? If you know what I'm asking.
No, there. Another great question. Well, I think history, but also the media, I think both take jumps, both take steps. Mm-hmm. Saying that because at the end of my book, I talk about the Artsakh War. That was something that, as I was writing my book, was happening, and unfortunately it wasn't being addressed in the media to the degree that it should be, or really at all. And so for me, because my book was originally just meant for my family, I never meant to make it publicly available, but I realized that using this book, using my voice to help others, was so important, because at the end of the day, I can only say, oh, this is happening, this is frustrating, but what am I going to do about it? Mm-hmm. Where is that you know, mission in the sense of being proactive? And so for me, I realized this is how I can help others and help make a small difference, but a difference nonetheless. And so saying that, it was really important for me to put that at the end of the book to remind the reader that things are still going on, whether that's the something pertaining to the Armenian genocide or something pertaining to another genocide from somewhere else. And saying that because unfortunately, very recently, there's been another attack in Armenia, and Armenians have are dealing with that right now. And it's really hard to see that, but it's also harder, in my opinion, to know that it's not being addressed in the media. And people want to be able to trust where they're getting their news from, whether that's from a visual perspective or from a literary perspective. But for me, again, with the A to Z, well, are you only showing one side or are you showing everything? Mm-hmm. Because even though, for example, Ukraine, which my heart goes out to them, there's other things that are going on in the world. And there's other attacks on other countries that are going on in the world. So for me, I think A to Z is those letters in between are other countries dealing with the, with this? Are other countries dealing with genocide, or are they dealing with, you know, attacks and it's not going, it's going unreported? To me, that's really important because I really want some, I want people to take this and realize, wow, I didn't know a lot about it, or I didn't know it at all. And oh my gosh, it's still happening now. And I hope that turns another light bulb on in their head of, well, what else is happening that I'm not aware of? Let's, you know, be curious and let's look for things that maybe we don't even know where to look for. I think there's a lot of merit behind that. And I mean, I'll even say that for me, I'm always learning. I think it's great to learn. And I think it's great to know that I don't know everything. People think, oh, you must know everything about Armenian history. I don't. I'm still learning. Like I said with the Resistance Network, I read that after my book was published, and I still gained so much more knowledge from it. So to me, I think the letters in between are acknowledging both sides, but in terms of literacy and media, but also taking another approach or adding another letter to the alphabet in the sense of, what am I going to do with what I don't know or know?
Yeah. Speaking of the, like, what's going on right now, because I had, I saw a news article on that couple, I think it was a couple days ago.
Yes.
And then I saw a YouTube channel that I follow. All of a sudden they were talking about it. And I thought, wow, I had no idea that this was going on. And correct me if I if I'm wrong, is this, was there, there was fighting between Armenian and Azerbaijan forces?
Correct.
And this was in, I can't pronounce the region.
Nagorno-Karabakh.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And there was something that happened. I don't know if you just mentioned this, like when you had started the book. This was, there was a conflict a couple years ago too.
Right. There's been conflict in that region, which Armenians refer to it as Artsakh, for forever, pretty much. But at the time, this was inhabited by Armenians. There's, there was a, you know, the leader was Armenian. The language they speak was Armenian. It is part of Armenia for sure. But unfortunately, within the recent days, the land of the country of Armenia is being attacked as well. So it's much more than that region in particular. It's unfortunately most of the side of Armenia that's facing that area, which really saddens me because to me, you know, life evolves, but knowing where you came from and wanting that place to be thriving is so important. And even though I haven't been to Armenia and I would like to go, I hope that I'm able to. But I also hope that the people in Armenia are able to continue to persevere because Armenians are so resilient. But it's in things like this that question, make me question so much. Because if we're only showing what people want to see or what people already know, to me, that's the jump. And that's not good. We need to show as many things as we can, because the more people are aware, the more that they hopefully want to help. Mm-hmm. And to me, there's knowledge and merit behind that as well.
It seems like that we're, first off, I don't even know, do you even think most people know where Armenia is? Like, if they were asked, hey, identify this on a map.
I don't think so, but I also think that they're not alone with just not knowing where Armenia is. Mm-hmm. I'm a YouTube fan, and sometimes I'll see a clip where somebody's walking down the street asking them, where is this located, or where is that located, or how many states are in the United States? And you'll be baffled by the answers people say. So I would like to think that people know where Armenia is, but I'm also very much aware that, unfortunately, geography is not something that many people prioritize. I mean, I'll even say I appreciated geography in high school, but I'm sure there are some countries in the world that I'm not an expert on. Mm-hmm. So
the location of where Armenia is, and it's funny because I had to look it up, so I didn't really, my knowledge on it was not very great, but that is a very, look, that part of the world, and it's the same thing with like where my family's from. That's a tough part of the world where Armenia is sandwiched between, correct me if I'm wrong, Turkey, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Russia. That seems like a very, very tough place to be. You're between the, like we were just saying, Azerbaijan and the conflict there, and then Turkey and the conflict there. That just does, I can't imagine living in a place like that. And to think, you know, here, luckily I've heard people talk about this as far as like from a World War II, World War I perspective, where the fighting in Europe, because that we're separated by an ocean, and yes, we entered into those conflicts, but they never reach really our shores. I mean, you could say Pearl Harbor, but and how much of a difference that makes between, you know, how Europe has evolved and like how the United States has evolved. It's very fascinating to think just like the separation of the ocean and how much of an effect that has on us and then Europe.
The indirect versus the direct, even though we're still both experiencing it. No, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When people have asked where is Armenia located, especially in terms of Turkey and Azerbaijan, I've said that it's almost sandwiched in between, or it's the, think of an Oreo, and the cookie parts of it are Azerbaijan and Turkey, and then the cream center is Armenia. Mm-hmm. And so I think, or I know, yes, it would be terrifying to live in that center of such a tumultuous environment. I could not fathom what that is like, the constant fear, mm-hmm. The instability that brings. That to me, I have a lot of empathy and love for Armenia and for Armenians, and I hope that my book, well, I know my book has been able to help out a lot of children, because the proceeds from the book, or the author proceeds, are donated to help children, provide them with shoes. Oh, and wow. I mean, we take that as a luxury. I bought a pair of shoes this morning. I mean, but when you're living in an area or an environment where you don't have the ability to go out and buy a pair of shoes, or the quality of the shoes you currently have aren't that great, it's really hard to live your day-to-day life, I can imagine. Mm-hmm. And especially being a child and you're constantly growing. So for me, that's so important to use this book as a way to honor the past, educate the present, and then to help the future. I think that to me is such a way to encompass the whole premise of what really, in my opinion, sustainability is about.
That's really cool. Yeah. Besides this area, Southeast Detroit. You named the other, there's other large populations of Armenians across the country. Like, did you mention like Boston, Philadelphia, any others?
New Jersey and LA.
Any particular reason why from this time period, like people tended to come to like these areas? Was it just like the work that was available, industry, like here, automotive, et cetera? Like, did that have a role?
I believe automotive was a reason. In the book, a few of my, for example, my grandfather, my late grandfather worked for Ford. And so I believe that was an incentive of why specifically Detroit. I think also part of it in terms of where they were, people were scattered once they, you know, came over here, here being the United States. I think that might have to do as well with relatives, if they already had some relatives in certain places. I know that in the book, a few of my ancestors immigrated to certain parts based on who they knew and who was willing to take them in. And so it really didn't matter where they were located. It mattered that they were available and that they wanted to help. I think there's a little bit of that. It's just, well, a little bit of, let's just say, for example, you got Boston and LA. Those are both coastal regions.
Yeah.
And so I think that probably had something to do with that as well. But so I guess maybe all of the above to a degree.
And pretty much everybody or most who came over are going through Ellis Island, and then, you know, pretty much everybody's entering in that way, as I'm sure maybe most people were at this time period.
I mean, most people that immigrated came, whether you're Armenian or not, whether you're coming from the genocide or not, people, to my knowledge, came over to Ellis Island. And doing the research for my book, the Ellis Island Foundation is incredible. I will give them props all day long. It was amazing to me just to see how detailed and accurate they were with not only the dates, but the ship that people arrived on, or the ages of people, or, I mean, it took me a bit to figure out the site and Armenian names, is that, since you've read the book, you can attest, and you're Macedonian as well. So the spellings of the names weren't 100% accurate, but you know, you learn to be a little creative with, oh, maybe they spelled the name like this, or maybe they spelled the name like that, and then you'd find it. There were a couple times where I knew the year that my ancestors arrived, and I knew the boat. And so based on that, I was able to zone in and then find, okay, who's everybody that was on the boat? And then was able to kind of bring that circle a little bit smaller until I was able to find it. So, but it was, I mean, it was amazing. The I guess, quote, historian in me, I mean, I was up very late that night where I first discovered how that website works, because I found it fascinating. In the book, there's some dates that were really prominent to me, one of them being one of my ancestors arrived in Ellis Island on Halloween one year. And I thought, wow, you're coming over on Halloween. And here I am, like, you know, thinking of my youth trick-or-treating on Halloween.
Yeah.
Just from a perspective standpoint. And, you know, I really try to ground myself and to be humble and appreciative of the life that I have, but also to know about perspective, I think, is so important, whatever you're dealing with. And for me, that was one of those moments of perspective, especially during the pandemic. But I mean, yeah, Halloween for my ancestor was vastly different than the Halloween that I experienced. But I also know that I wouldn't have had that Halloween had they not come over. So it was a very eye-opening moment for sure. And I had many of those. So
you mentioned, so you just went, this was a website. Did you have to, you didn't have to like contact anybody or go to actually like go to New York to research?
No, I think I just put my email in and, and you know, I think from there I could access it. I don't think I had to pay for it. which was really cool. I think they just wanted my email, and I think I had to log in every time I used it, but it was nice too because you could save things. So I haven't been on this site in a bit, but using my memory right now, there is like a part of your, let's say your profile, where you could just pull up all the places that you quote unquote pinned or that you saved. And to me, that was great because yes, I was typing things out or I was writing things down, but if I wanted to go back and for a reference or just to see it again or to see the boat or whatever it was right there. And it was nice to have everything cataloged too.
I can't imagine travel at that time to like be on a boat for that long. Plus you have to, I mean, are you pretty much, would you have to sail through the Mediterranean? So you're on a boat the entire time. It's not like you're traveling like through the land to get to like, let's say Portugal. And then from Portugal, you're getting on a boat. You're going straight from like through the Mediterranean all the way to America.
I mean, that journey was not easy too.
Yeah.
There's a couple stories in the book where I believe one of my family members unfortunately passed away. And she was very young, just because of either the starvation or the dehydration or the diseases on the boat. One of my ancestors in the book as well, I believe he was put on the boat, but I don't remember how exactly. But I think the boat itself or the room he was in was just so hot. And he didn't know if he was going to make it because of just how hot it was and how he couldn't like leave the room. So the journey itself was not an easy one. And to me, I can only imagine that strength that each person had to go through, just to leave the place that they've only known, as tumultuous as that environment was. And then the journey was not an easy one, and they didn't even know where they were going to. I could not, and they also didn't speak the language that they were of the place they were going to. I mean, I know times are hard for people, and you know, I'm not trying to diminish that at all. Hard times are hard times, but again, with the perspective, I know for me, I could not go through that, and I have a lot of compassion, empathy, respect, admiration for all of those people that did it. Regardless if they're my relatives or if they're not, because that's just strength on a whole nother level.
And so the language that's spoken in Armenia is just Armenian?
Yes.
Okay. Is that similar to like other languages?
Well, my grandmother, she speaks Turkish as well. A lot of Armenians had to flee their home, and unfortunately, again, the sandwich and metaphor or geographical metaphor, had to go to enemy territory. And so again, I could not fathom what that must have been like, but a lot of the survivors of the genocide and the next generation that followed, being my great grandmother, my grandmother, for example, spoke Turkish. So I believe there is some overlapping of the language to a degree, but I don't speak Armenian fluently. So I guess that is all that I'll say on that. So
I was going to ask how well, like growing up, did you have to speak it like in the house, like with your parents, family, et cetera?
My mom is fluent. It was her first language. Armenian, it is her first language, I guess. But because my father did not speak it fluently, so English is my only language. But you know, when I would pray in the past, I would pray in Armenian. And I know how to say a few Armenian sentences and to carry the conversation on. And that's pretty much it.
I'm kind of the same way.
I was going to ask, yes.
I grew up, we didn't use it really growing up, unless I was over at my grandparents' house. because they don't speak English. So when I was little, I pretty much, that's the only way I could communicate with them. And they kind of pretty much raised me. I spent a lot of time with my grandparents as a child. And then as I grew up, spent less and less time with them. So I lost, and I wasn't even that good to begin with, but I lost like a lot of it. And to like this day, it's very broken Macedonian. Like every other word is an English word. And luckily, like my grandparents understand English better than I understand Macedonian. And I feel like I should be better. And I've thought about like relearning it or, you know, taking classes and such, but I don't, it's a tough language. Oh, and yeah. There's two alphabets too.
Oh, there are? I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So if you, I can't read it. I don't, yeah, that's a whole nother, like whole nother thing. But yeah, there's two alphabets. There's traditional, you know, traditional like, English letters, and then there's a Cyrillic, which is
looks
pretty crazy if you ever see it.
Yeah. The reading Armenian is something I cannot do. It is a beautiful, it's a beautifully written language for sure, but mm-hmm. it is something that is surpassed me for right now at least. But in terms of what you're saying with, you know, how you spoke more Macedonian when you were younger versus now, to me, I guess, you know, you're not in the environment where many people speak Macedonian. And
yeah,
from your grandparents' perspective, they are in an environment where people speak English. And so I guess for me, being an outside observer from what you just said, it makes sense why they are able to grasp more of the English language, because that's what they're surrounding by. That's what they're surrounded by. So giving you a little bit of credit.
Oh, thank you.
So thank you.
My parents went back actually this summer. They were there in May. My parents are pretty much fluent, and they said that when they went back there, they picked up on some subtle differences in, you know, these little, like these dialects that are very particular to like the certain village where they grew up in. It was like within the first couple of days, there was kind of a learning curve, but then once, like to what you're saying, once you're fully immersed in it, they were fine. Like they, no issues at all. They had a blast. I've never been. But
I was going to ask, yeah.
I'd like to go. I'd like to go someday. Have, like with your family, have any of your other family members been back to Armenia?
My mom has, I believe, twice. Mm-hmm. I know that my mom and my grandmother went back to Turkey a few years ago, which my grandmother loved. I mean, you know, it was where she grew up, and she really enjoyed showing my mom where she went to school, because education was so important to them and still is. And I'm really glad that they both were able to have that, because kind of like what I just was saying, in a way of your grandparents being around your environment, it was really cool that my mom was able to have an opportunity to be around what my grandmother, what her environment, her upbringing, and that surrounding part of who, you know, formed her into who she is.
Yeah.
That she was able to experience that too. It's interesting just to see, or to be the outside observer of how different people's lives were and what they are now. And even though I'm close with my grandma, it's something that I have no idea what her life was about before she came over here. And I think that's really interesting that my mom was able to have that experience to travel and see that. But I think it's also great that I was able to have the experience of sitting down with my grandma and having these conversations with her, because again, like what I started off our conversation with, honoring the history, however that is, honoring the person, is just really important.
Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't know this until reading your book. So are most Armenians are Christian Orthodox?
Yes. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's the same. That's the same with us, like pretty much all Orthodox. Yeah. And that's a pretty, like, religion is a pretty big part of that community.
Yeah. I know that in Armenia there are / were many, many ancient churches. I mean, in the book I mentioned how Armenia was the first country to adopt religion or Christianity in, I think it was like 301 AD, wow. 307 AD. I don't know. I'm not, I guess I could look right now, but so they definitely pride themselves a lot on that. But I think also there's just a lot more to what Armenians are. And I think that's great. I think it's good to have a sense of religion, the higher power. I think it's a good, also to have so much of who we are surrounded by food as well. However your love language is, whether that's through prayer, whether that's through service and or through, you know, making food for other people and bringing that family aspect together is just so important. But I think it's also so great that there's many different avenues that really make Armenians who they are. And I'm sure that you can relate to that too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Food is very, very big.
What's your favorite Macedonian food?
I would say we have something called chababchina, which are like, I don't want to say hot dogs, but they are like...
A sausage?
Sausage,
okay,
yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I would say that's probably my favorite.
Do you put, I don't want to say ketchup on it, but what do you put, what do you put, me just thinking of a hot dog, what do you eat it with? Is it with a bun or is it?
You know, I'm very plain. I just eat them as is. I don't put, no ketchup, no barbecue sauce. Not necessarily that I want to like ruin anything. I try to be health conscious.
Well, I guess what is the authentic way to eat it? How do Macedonians typically eat that? I don't think it's with barbecue sauce, but I'm just saying from a authentic perspective, what is the typical traditional way to consume it?
I would say chababchina with a side of, what do we call it? It's basically like sauerkraut.
Okay.
But I forget the exact word for it. Something like that. And then we have sirine, just cheese, feta cheese. That's always really big. And peppers. Serbians, Macedonians, they love peppers.
That's cool. No, yeah. That, I mean, I'm picturing that in my head right now. That sounds good. Question for you. You asked me about, you know, books with Armenian history. Is there a book about Macedonian history that I could read that you would recommend? Putting you on the spot now.
Yeah. No, that's a great question. I have not read any to recommend one. My dad has one that's simply, it's just titled The Serbs. And I don't know who the author is. But it is a book, I think it's called The Serbs, Guardians of the Gate. This is it right here.
Oh, okay.
The Guardians of the Gate by R.G.D. Laffin. And... again, I've never read it, but amongst all the books that my dad has, and he's got a lot, he's got multiple bookshelves. This is like the only one on anything related to like our family and like the history of our heritage. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that it's got to be pretty good if my dad has it.
Trusted recommendation. No, absolutely. Yeah. No, I remember when we spoke previously to this, or prior to this, we were talking about books that influenced us, and to, you know, me in my book, for example, and you with this podcast, for example, because it's surrounding, I think it's a really cool thing what you're doing, by the way, of interviewing authors and learning about the author's story, but also the book and the story behind the story. I think that's just really unique thing that you're doing. And I think that's really eye-opening too, just from the side of the interviewee, but also the interviewer. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the question for you is, what are some books that you're currently reading that are inspiring to you now? Because I know when we talked last, we were talking about books that inspired us with the love of learning and reading. But what about now, too?
Right. As of right now, the books, well, I'll tell you the books that I'm reading right now. One is called Debt by David Graeber. It's a book about debt.
Surprise.
Surprise. Basically like the history of debt and money and how they've been used. And then the other book I'm reading is Game Change. You ever heard of that one?
Game Change, no.
It's about the 2008 presidential election.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Very, very interesting book, like hearing the backstory of everything that was going on at that time. Mm-hmm. And I obviously, like, I'm old enough, I remember what was going on, but I wouldn't say I was very, like, aware, if that makes sense. So yeah. It's cool to read this book and kind of see that, oh, this is the things that are that happened at this time are kind of still things that happen today. I don't know if it's anything really too different. Mm-hmm. From the sounds of it. Those are two. And I always read, I'm journeying through the Bible too. So that's another book that I'm reading. As far as your question on inspiration though, mm-hmm. In books that have really inspired me,
I guess the Bible would be one that you said, because you said that you've been continuously reading it.
Yeah.
So I guess like a book that you'd go back to a lot, or a book that's a comfort, or just a continuous inspiration. I mean, it can be more than one too. Mm-hmm. I know I have more than one.
Yeah. The Bible, yeah, I've been going through it. It's been like very slow, mm-hmm. like a chapter, like here and there, like once every couple of days. So it's been a while. I remember a guy I was listening to say that sometimes, and I'm trying to do this in my read through. I'm not the best at it, but he says sometimes when we read the Bible, we take it in. We take it in its length, but not its depth. And what I think he says by that is sometimes we just read the words, but we don't see the deeper meaning in it. And it's tough for me, especially reading like King James. Sometimes I have to reference like an online source, like, what were they saying here? Mm-hmm. 'Cause I don't quite get it from the King James version. I know they have other versions that are like English Standard, NAV, I believe it's called, etc. But yeah, King James can be kind of tough.
The meaning behind the meaning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And who knows even if that meaning was lost from the translation previously, which I think was Greek. I think from Greek it was translated to English, to King James, even though it was originally written in, I could be getting this wrong, Aramaic and Hebrew, and then Greek, and then English as we have it today. Mm-hmm. I think my history is not super well versed.
No worries.
Definitely the Bible. There are some very inspirational things from the Bible, mm-hmm. inspirational stories. From the New Testament, I go back and I reread certain sections of it. I love something that Jesus said. The stone that the builders rejected became the head of the corner.
Oh, wow.
I think it's repeated definitely in Matthew and I think in the other Gospels too. And I always took that as, okay, so the builders have this stone, right? And they cast it aside as like it's not good. But in the end, it becomes like the centerpiece of your temple.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of reminds me of just things in my life where I totally disregard certain things as not too important, something like that. And in the end, it ends up coming back as, oh, no, that was actually really important.
Right. No, that's interesting. I mean, you were just talking about how often you read it or don't read it. But to me, progress is progress no matter how small it is. And saying that because of the analogy that you said, which I thought was so profound, of reading something and trying to understand it from the perspective of the length and the depth of it versus just reading it to read it.
Yeah.
Are you absorbing it? And to me, that's the biggest takeaway of anything. Whether it's my book, if it's the Bible, if it's a book you want to read about, a topic you're interested in, or even if it's an article that you're reading about, whatever that is.
Mm.
I think taking the second to question it or to say, I don't know what that means, or I think I do, but let's try to figure out more. To me, that's progress. Not necessarily completing the article as fast as I can or completing the book as quickly as I can, no matter the length of the article or the book. I think it's, well, what am I going to take away from it? And how am I going to grow and learn from it? But also, how am I going to apply it to my life?
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading a book. Well, I'm reading two books right now, I guess, that inspire me. One of them's, it's Speeches, and it's by Barack Obama and Ken, I can't pronounce his last name, starts with an M, but mm-hmm. it's all of his speeches throughout his presidency.
Okay.
And I think that, to me, I mean, I like to write. I like to write my scripts for speeches that I've given, and I think it's really cool just to see how people evolve through their writing, through their experience, and to see that progression and that ability to gain a sight of how somebody is growing through their words, I think is just so profound and inspiring. And I mean, you know, there are speeches he had to write about for hard topics and speeches he had to write about for topics that, like his inauguration, you know, it's a whole wide variety of them. But you see somebody grow so much, and I think it's such a unique thing to have all of those in one book and to see somebody's journey in the process of it, because we're all growing and we're all learning. And I think there's a lot of, I've said this word a couple of times, but merit behind seeing how people can evolve through their words and also mm-hmm. how they display their words too. Another book mm-hmm. I've been reading that's, I guess, in a way like my Bible, I read it and reread it and kind of jump around it, not chronologically. It's called 101 Essays That Change the Way You Think, and it's by Brianna Weist. And she's I just turned 30, but she's a 29-year-old author,
oh, wow.
just like me. And
wow. She
takes the time to dive into things that people might be aware of, but they might not want to acknowledge. No one's perfect. I'm not perfect. But to me, it's, well, how can I work on what I want to work on? Or how can I work to be better? I think we constantly evolve in life, but there's so much of an importance of, well, how can I continue to evolve and grow in ways that enhance me and enhance the people I'm around? Because the moment where I feel like I stay stagnant or I stay comfortable, that's where I stop growing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be stagnant. I want to continue to learn, because that's my opinion what life's about, is always trying to stay curious. And so she has each different essay is on a different topic. And sometimes they're lists and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're paragraphs. Sometimes they're more formal essays. But they all revolve around topics that everybody can relate to. And I think that's so important too, because unity is something that we need so much right now. We already needed before the pandemic, during the pandemic, and I guess we're still in the pandemic, but I hope we are towards the end of the pandemic. But that's something where I really want, or I hope that people can get from my book, is a sense of community, a sense of purpose, and a sense of inspiration behind the hardest times, that there's always a path to see the light. And if people really want to take the time to go in depth, or if they don't, to mm-hmm. me is the biggest differentiator.
What would you say, what's next for you after this book? Do you foresee another book on the horizon?
Good question. I'm starting my job in a week. I'm going to be working for Deloitte in sustainability consulting, which is mm-hmm. something I've always wanted to do. I got my undergrad in sustainable business specifically. And so to me, that's going to be my main priority. I do like to write. I have a couple of things that I've been working on, but at the moment I'm not working on them right now, but I was mm-hmm. to me, I think if I want to go back to them, sure. Mm-hmm. Are they about Armenian history? No, but, to me it's, you know, I like to write. And if something turns into something, cool. I'm not really on a timeline of it. Mm-hmm. This book in particular, I was on a timeline because April is the month where the genocide's remembered. And I wanted the book to come out in April. And so for me, working towards that timeline was really challenging from a time perspective too. But in doing that while working and going to school was a lot, but I'm trying to give myself the sense of grace of we don't need to be doing too much all the time. And so for me, I'm trying to take this as a lesson of, okay, if I want to do a chapter of this book one day, or if I want to just work on writing on this other book today, or if I want to do research, let's do that. Or if I want to read one of those two books I said, to me, like, that's still something that I'm just trying to do, but also being aware of, I don't need to write a chapter a day. What am I working towards? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, maybe I'll write another book. Maybe I won't. But I really like the writing process. I like writing in detail. I like being descriptive. I mean, I know how you and I both talked about inspiration of books when you were growing up. And for me, I think there's just something so magical about an author being able to write so eloquently that the reader can envision what the writer is writing. And to picture that in your mind with all the detail, I think is something so unique. And so for me, I really like to do that. So who knows? I don't want to say like never say never, I won't write something again, but maybe I will. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to the day where, if you do write something, that I read it again and we have you back on the podcast.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you so much. I appreciate you and getting to know you more. And I'm definitely gonna be, what is it called, the guardian of the gate. I'll definitely be checking that out. And, cause you know, I'm not an expert on Macedonian history, but I want to learn more about it.
Me too.
I think there's a lot of, I don't know. I think it's cool to see about the different, ethnicities and mm-hmm. the history surrounding those. And I mean, hearing about you described, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that sausage because I'm literally going to butcher it. But it's cool just to to learn more about that. I mean, I know in my book I talked about Armenian cuisine, but just to whatever little bit of knowledge I can get, I think is really, really informational. But yeah, a lot of respect for you and what you're doing. And yeah, I'm looking forward to, you know, listening to this one when it comes out, and also listening to the other ones in the future too. So thank you so much, Chris.
No, yeah, thank you very much, Ariana. And again, the book is Forget Me Not, Armenian Genocide Recollections. Really quick, for if for people interested in purchasing the book, is the best way to get it Amazon or your website?
Great question. So actually, very recently, I've partnered with Ingram Books. And so my book is, within the last few weeks, it's becoming widely available online. So it's going to be digitally available. Like, you could buy it online anywhere. So whether that's Barnes & Noble, whether that's Schuller Books, whether that's Amazon, if there's a bookstore anywhere, like, you can get it online. So I say Barnes & Noble, Schuller Books, Amazon are like the top three.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for me, it's, you know, still kind of baffling that my books in those, you know, what is it? Like, that it's in Barnes & Noble, for example. Yeah. And, but for me, it's great and important that the book's able to be bought wherever, because the more people that want to attain this now can, and the more people that are able to buy this book because it's more available, the more kids we can help in the process. So to me, that's a win-win-win.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, but, very cool.
But yeah, my website is forgetmenotarmenianbooks.com. And so I have all of my interviews and articles on my book and information about me, and also links to buying the book on there too. But yeah, if you just type the title and my name in, it should pop up, as well as the BNN thing too. So thank you.
Absolutely. And I'll include links. I'll include a link to your website too in the description once this gets posted. And yeah, I really appreciate you coming on and having this conversation with me. It was a lot of fun. And I learned a lot, both reading the book and sitting down here with you and talking to you. And like I said, we'll have you back on to talk about the next work that you write.
Book 2.0.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you. I appreciate you, Chris, and it was great to learn so much about you too. So I've learned so much just in our conversation today. So thank you again for your time.
Absolutely. And again, everybody, thank you very much for listening. My name is Chris. This has been Chitash. Take care.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.